Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm a longstanding writer, author, journalist of health, food, and the environment, reporting on a wide range of venues, breaking different stories, connecting the dots between food, health, and the environment, and the connection between ourselves and our total environment, our society, the planet Earth, and the cosmos. So every week on Connect the Dots, we discuss we bring on different experts, authors, thought leaders, poets to discuss various aspects of our multidimensional reality and how it all interconnects. Today is the day of a full moon. It's a hunter's moon of the fall season, if you're listening to this show live. And we have a very special show for you today. The show I am dedicating to two wonderful friends in my life, the wonderful mythic seer and teacher, Steve Nelson, and Darlie Adair, his beautiful life partner, who are facing a passage, you know, in a passage between this life and beyond over the next days, weeks, and months as we speak. So love and blessings to them, and dedicating the show and this full moon to them. I have a very wonderful guest for today's show. I was just so thrilled to find her work. Her name is Mary Reynolds Thompson. She's a poet and a facilitator of poetry and journal therapy, dedicated to bringing forth the story of the wild soul. This story is rooted in our oneness with nature and a vision of the world in which the wild landscapes of both earth and soul can thrive. She's had a long-standing connection to the earth, which she views as sacred, and was key to her own health recovery, which we'll learn more about on the program today. She's also the author of a new book, hot off the presses, called In Praise of the Wild Soul, and that's what we're going to be talking about on today's show. I'm so delighted to welcome you to Connect the Dots, Mary Reynolds Thompson.
Thank you, Allison. It's very, very good to be here. And I'm just going to, if I may, just say the book is actually called Reclaim. I love In Praise of the Wild Soul, which would have been a great title too, but it's actually Reclaiming the Wild Soul.
Oh, all right. Yes, that makes a lot of sense. They both do. Reclaiming, let's talk about that little Freudian slip and the differences between the two, because what you really do is praising, but many of us are in various ways disconnected, both from the earth, from nature, and from our own wild original self in some kind of way. And one of the things that really touches me about your work and this book is that, you know, in the environmental movement, which is, you know, a movement, an uprising, an upsurge of people seeking to basically protect the ecology of the earth such that it remains a sustainable, ongoing, protective habitat, as it has long been for centuries, both for human beings and for all other living beings. And I've been very involved in that movement, you know, through advocacy. We did a show a week or so back on the climate march. We discussed some of the things that are functioning as industrial and societal threats to that. But one of the things that we hear a lot in the environmental movement is, oh, we want to take children out in nature because when children and people connect to nature, when they have a connection to nature, then they care for our habitat. Then they care for the environment. They form a bond with it. So, you know, seeing the way we have become disconnected and all of the downsides that is, you know, kind of driving us toward, it's very natural for people to then say, how do we create that core connection, which for many people is missing? And it seems that, you know, just it's wonderful if exhorting people to go out in nature, giving them opportunities to do so, because many people don't have that opportunity, or don't many others don't make that opportunity. All of that is good, but you're really coming from doing it for the sake of your own self in some kind of way. You're talking about the way that nature and our connection to that wildness heals us. How did you come to that? How did that become your focus, your message, your work?
Right. Yes, and I think that that's really true. That I'm very. One of the things is that we're kind of learning that what we are doing to the earth is damaging to our bodies. I mean, we are getting that if we poison the rivers and the oceans, that those waters will come back into our mother's wombs, into our blood, and poison us. You know, we sort of get that physically breathing polluted air is bad for our lungs. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that really began to interest me was, what is it like to our psyche and souls when we begin to dewild the world? Do we actually feel this emotionally as well as have a physical thing? And it began for me when I trained to be a facilitator of poetry therapy, and I was really drawn to the nature poets. And what I noticed was that though their eye was always on outer nature, they always returned us to our inner nature. So I began to think about, my goodness, if what used to be a healthy forest that we looked out on is now a clear-cut, sterile area, how do we return to our inner nature from that place? Mm. Do we feel less alive, less fertile, less creative? And so I began to be very fascinated by this dance between inner and outer nature. And then at the same time that I was studying poetry therapy, my husband was at the California Institute of Integral Studies getting his second master's in philosophy, cosmology, and consciousness. And we were introduced to writers like Thomas Berry, and who's a cultural historian who really speaks to the pain of separation from the earth. And I began to see this separation from the earth as really the root cause of so much pain and suffering. Not only the destruction that we put onto the earth, but the alienation and the isolation and the addiction and the lostness, if there could be such a word, of so many people in our society today. Mm-hmm. That we've literally been uprooted, torn from something that seems absolutely primary and essential to us, which is that connection to Earth.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating, because this is really a kind of missing link that you have noticed and focused our attention on, because you know in traditional cosmology, which I've always had, as I've never spoken of it directly on the show, but readers, my listeners may have deduced this from some of my conversations with some of our guests, I've always had a kind of love-hate relationship with it personally, because it seems like when we talk about disconnection, it's like disconnection from the eternal source. And so it's very sky-oriented, very abstract, there's some great cosmic out there that, we can imagine, but that we cannot see, that we can, can't that readily connect to, then we have to kind of believe in it in some kind of mental or abstract way. And as kind of more earth-centric myself, not because I'm necessarily, a complete naturalist in any kind of sense, but more because I feel the thirst, the longing, and the rich sense of a bond when I'm in natural and wild places. And there are certain ones that I've returned to over and over and over again throughout my life. So you're really talking about healing that, and even a lot of sort of traditional Asian spirituality or cosmology disconnects from that and says, it's all in your mind. If you only worked out your mind, all would be well. You're not saying that. You're saying we have something here that's alive, that's beloved, that we come forth from in a very powerful sense. We're not just an abstraction, you know, a molecule in the cosmos. There's something else going on here. And that's it's that disconnection that is so primal.
Yes, and thank you so much for bringing this up, because I think this is such a core thing that so many of our religions have also been uprooted. And, you know, this idea that everything is pure spirit, and but the earth isn't, that the earth has somehow become desacralized and spirit has sort of been taken offshore. You know, it's something that we reach for outside of our immediate time and place. And I think that there is a tendency, especially in some New Age religions, to be so abstracted, so to believe that thought, as you mentioned, that we can think ourselves into a right way of living. Now, I believe hugely in intention. I believe all of that, but I also believe in the real and rooting ourselves in substance, in earthiness, in the reality of living on a finite planet. I mean, our spirit can be infinite, but the planet is finite. And I think we've kind of imploded those two things so that we think because we have spiritual infinity that we have earth infinity, when in fact we don't. The other thing is that when you take the sacred out of the earth, when you say it exists in paradise or whatever sort of vision you have for that sort of abstracted God and godly place, then, well, we can do anything to an earth that isn't ensouled. I mean, so what does it matter if we cut down forests? The trees aren't sacred beings. The soil isn't a sacred body. You know, our rivers aren't sacred beings. It doesn't matter. We're the only ones who carry sacredness. And so I think that it's a very dangerous sort of evolution that's happened, and one sort of understands why. I mean, really, some might say it came out of the medieval period and the plague, where the world began to be so dangerous that we had to take our gods and move it out of the world, you know, because there was so much infection and suffering and plague and death. And so nature became such a horrific and frightening place to so many people. And this is what frightens me, Alison, because now with climate change, nature is beginning to react in very serious and quite violent ways. And I'm terrified that that gives us another excuse to further abstract us from our connection to nature, you know, and to make nature the one that's acting badly, rather than seeing the relationship to what we're doing to the natural world as causing this phenomenon.
I was just, you know, almost thinking something very close to that as you were talking about that medieval thing. It's almost as if, having come from that traumatic episode in our collective history, we are recreating that reality, much as individuals do. You know, if they've had an abusive or traumatic episode of some kind, then, you know, the tendency will be to repeat it. And it's almost as if we are, you know, having disconnected at a time of danger, we've missed the message that it's really, you know, the planet is carrying us, and the earth and all of the interlocking beings here we're keeping each other alive and well, and we've missed that message and actually are creating the kind of dangerous environment that harkens back to that. Because I think nowadays, I mean, right now, for example, I'm looking out a window on beautiful autumnal changing bushes and trees, you know, with the greens and the rusts, and, you know, so that sense of continuity, and, you know, in a kind of sky that's kind of grayed out with some clouds, and there's a bird flying, you know, so I can reconnect to that. But it's very easy to, you know, to kind of, for example, if I do another activity that I do a lot of, follow the news, which I think is important in order to participate in our society. And I am a purveyor of the news, a reporter of the news. You know, if you look at the pylon of different things we're doing, I mean, one after another of them is really tragic. Just yesterday, for example, it was revealed that oil company industrial waste has been disposed of into Central California water aquifers, you know. Horrible. So, and I, you know, it's my job to kind of look at all of that and report on it and raise awareness of it so that people can become activated to protect the life and all that's sacred here. But, you know, it's, we're creating that as, not just in an abstract way, we're doing it physically due to this disconnection.
Absolutely. And I think this is why, you know, in my work, I'm so fascinated about the shift of consciousness. Because so many good people like yourself are fighting these individual wars, right, against, you know, maybe that's not the right language for it, but we're certainly trying to resist these egregious acts against the earth. I mean, the pouring of oil, the, you know, lopping off of mountaintops. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And yet, the more we fight, the more horrors seem to be perpetrated. And so it seems to me that there really has to be the shift of consciousness. And the shift of consciousness is this understanding that what we do to the earth, we do to ourselves. Because we are the earth in human form. And when we get that, we are going to be a lot less likely to think that we can get away with this, you know, endless destruction and escape unscathed, because we think that we are so smart and so brilliant. And of course we are. As a species, we're extraordinary. But that has a shadow side to it. And the shadow side to that is that we think that we're so good at adapting, that we're so technologically advanced, that somehow we can escape the repercussions of our behaviors.
Yes, I agree with you. There's that, you know, technological fix fantasy out there. And of course, because the situation is so frightening, people, you know, want to go further out on that limb and, you know, find that kind of stuff. No question about it. I was invited to cover a conference. I won't say what it was exactly. And to come back down to New York City, which is one of my regular bases away from this country locale where I am fortunate to be at the moment. And, you know, I looked at the conference and it was a lot of bright, high achieving, optimistic young people. I was just like, oh, wow, this is so interesting. And yet every one of them was doing something that was either designy, techie. There was no, you know, it was like, we can redesign this and make it pretty and then it will all work kind of thing. Right. Or we can come up with a technical quick fix. And none of it actually related to anything in the environment, to anything in health, which are my areas, nor was it community interconnected to the human community, to the human body, to the values, right, to the feelings, right, to the experience, you know. It was right, all operating on some other plane. And I looked, I carefully read the biography of every speaker because I thought, you know, I'm always open to whatever comes up from reality. I'm like, well, is there somebody, one person here, you know, perhaps that I'm supposed to meet and trek out of nature to go do this? And the answer was no, you know. So, and it made me sad because the people who invited me were very idealistic, lovely, well-meaning younger generation people with whom I'm happy to have a connection, you know. So,
right. Well, it's interesting. You know, I'm going to be at a speaking at a conference called Techno-Utopianism and the Fate of the Earth in late October in New York City. And, very interesting. It's put on by the International Forum of Globalization. But it's really saying, you know, we live, and this is what Thomas Berry, one of the influencers I spoke about earlier, talked about, was this technological entrancement. Mm-hmm. That this is another kind of addiction that we have. So we have this techno-utopian vision that that we can create the ideal world through technology, which, as you so rightly say, is this further abstraction from Earth, from real people, real community, real Earth community. And yet it's very beguiling. And, you know, we think about how we addict our children so early now. I mean, I see on my local news all the time that Microsoft or Apple are giving away, you know, computers in schools. Kids are now learning everything on computers. They're clutching their computers. I was traveling a few months ago, and a father took away from his daughter, a very, very young daughter, maybe 3 years old, the iPad, because they were getting on the plane, and she went in to the biggest. I was rather gloriously amazed by the passion that she just howling. And I thought about, you know, how I used to clutch, you know, a stuffed teddy bear or something, but she was clutching her iPad. And, you know, she was being wrenched from that. So it's not surprising that we're growing generations of people who believe, are vested in, really a very magical relationship with their techno gadgets and gadgets, because it starts so young in them.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, that is an amazing story because, you know, that teddy bear is not just a representative of the animals and our animal nature and everything, but it's a living being. And I studied and worked for some years in early childhood schooling and education and psychology and all of that. And that's the transitional object, you know, from the bond with the mother. Of course, that also is very interrupted by the demands of our business-oriented world, you know, and so, you know, children don't have a long time, some of them, to really bond as infants and newborns with their mother directly because mom has to go to work, which, you know, something we all fought for and everything. I'm not, you know, knocking it, but I'm just saying there is a kind of, you know, a certain change in the nature of that bond. And the whole point of the teddy bear was to be, you know, the object that helps, you know, the child separate and develop independence and kind of incorporate the love of the mother as the child sets forth independently to lead their own life in the world. And the very first step away is that teddy bear. And so,
interesting. And now it's not the teddy bear.
That's right. And what is it instead, right?
Yeah, that's very interesting. I hadn't thought about it that way. But what you're really talking about is that sort of initial intense bonding.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so if that bond then is transitioned to a teddy bear, then that's a representative for all the animals and the natural world, actually, isn't it?
Right. And it's very tactile. It's, you know, you hug it and kiss it and, you know, pet it and talk to it and squeeze it and, you know, all of those things so that it looks like a, you know, torn up old whatever. You know, it's love to death is really what happens, you know,
that's
we
right.
know that. And, yeah, and now it's this metal gleaming, different, very different. And
very.
I think this is what's happening, too, is these changes we're making are happening so rapidly that we're not, I mean, this is what, you know, Richard Louv talks about so beautifully in his book, Last Child in the Woods, is, you know, we're, the way children are being raised and grown up now has changed so dramatically and so swiftly. We don't know what the repercussions are going to be. We don't know how that's going to play out. You know, it used to be that we could just go out and play. I mean, I grew up in central London. So you'd think, you know, I was born in 1956, you'd think, well, central London, she couldn't go out and play by herself. Nonsense. I was out and roaming from an early age, tumbling into any park I could find, you know, safe as could be, really. And if I wasn't, I didn't know that I wasn't, you know, because the media hadn't poured fear into my parents' soul nor my own. And so I had that direct experience with my neighborhood and the world about me. And now kids, you know, they're much more contained inside. they are being entertained and sort of babysat by their, you know, their video games and so on and so forth. And we don't know what kind of people we're growing because we haven't had time to really think about it. And so, you know, this thing that fascinates me, which is how do we get back to this more primal, deeper part of human nature, which is this bonding with the earth. You know, in a day and times as 21st century citizens, because I don't believe that we want to go back to living as indigenous people, nor can we. Mm-hmm. But what is it to, you know, what I call sort of walk the wild edge? I mean, how do we hold on to indigenous values while being in the modern world?
Mm. Yeah, that is the question. And, you know, your book provides some of the answers. What do you mean by, you know, walking the wild edge? What is that?
Well, to me, it's, you know, this is where I get into my sort of optimistic side, is, you know, the wild edge for me is almost like an ecotone area, which we know in nature is when two sort of bioregions converge. And on that, in that sort of point of convergence, there's the most life, because the species from both bioregions sort of come together, plus these new ones arise out of this sort of meeting point. So for me, the wild edge is what's the sort of indigeneity, the part of us that longs to belong to a place that is embodied, open, that our senses are open, that we love to smell the grass. We love, as you talked about, to observe the changing colors of the trees. That part of us that feels rooted in the earth. What happens when we nudge that up against the techno side of us, and we're driving cars, and I don't know about you, but I'm on my computer a lot of the time, mm-hmm. and most of us are, and that's the way we live. But is there within that something very alive? Is there an ability to hold both? And I think that's the question that we have to ask, because right now the tendency is to just, we're equally, I think, addicted to this sense of progress, like that we're all headed somewhere, right? And mm-hmm. that we leave behind what was, and we're moving towards some, I don't know, utopian mm-hmm. ideal, right? Mm-hmm. But that's not really how nature works. I mean, we have still our reptilian brains in our heads. Nature doesn't tend to discard, it adds on to. So what happens when we don't discard this deep, profound, far more ancient, far more long-lived connection, and acknowledge that technology is part of our lives? I don't know what the answer is, but I'm curious about the question. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious what happens if we don't just point our heads forward, but we look back and embrace that part of us too.
Mm, that's so interesting. Great question for us all to contemplate. You know, it's funny because I have a name for that forward-looking part in myself. You know, I have a name for that I call that, and I become more and more aware of it, which as one moves on in years of life, you know, there has to be a shift because, you know, we're not looking 50 years ahead, that kind of thing.
Right.
But the habits of mind that have been ingrained by getting by in the world and participating in our society and all of that, you know, persist, and I certainly have plenty of them, and I call that over the next mountain.
You know, there's always a mountain. I know that feeling. I can almost feel that in my own body when you say that. You know, I have that sense of just get over that. What's over the next mountain? Yeah.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. And so, but, you know, so just, you know, taking that, it's kind of sitting on the mountain, sitting in the valley, you know, hunkering down and looking in all directions. You know, there's a lot of as just as an attitudinal approach to life.
Right.
This, I just have to say, upon our break, we take a break at the halfway point of this show for station identification. Listeners, I hope you will stay with us in this wonderful, wonderful conversation with Mary Reynolds Thompson. She is the author of Reclaiming the Wild Soul. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Stay with us. Welcome back, listeners, to the second half of Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. And our show's theme music is very appropriate to the specific conversation that we're having, a wonderful conversation on today's show. That was Bobby McFerrin's The Garden. And, you know, always the reminder that we are in nature's garden. That's where we are. That's where we live. That's what we are nourished by, what we celebrate, what we love. That's the theme of our show today. If you've missed the first half of the show with Mary Reynolds Thompson, author of Reclaiming the Wild Soul, Discover Your Wild Soul Story, please do go back to our archives. The show will be listed later today and going forward, and catch up on that. It's been a fantastic conversation, which continues now. If you've been enjoying the show up till now and are sticking with us, please do like us on iTunes, as well as sharing this with your friends. I, for one, have to say I am loving this topic. to say in this whole conversation. And in fact, I'm delighted because I see from I've gone to your website, which I suggest listeners, you can go to Mary Reynolds Thompson's website. It's Mary Reynolds, R-E-Y-N-O-L-D-S, Thompson, Thompson.com. And you can buy her book, Reclaiming the Wild Soul, and you can also read her blog, see her schedule. And in general, if you're enjoying this topic, immerse yourself. I went there during the break and I looked and saw that you are indeed coming to New York City, my burg, at a time when I will be there. So I'm going to look forward to meeting you there in person.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. Now let's talk a little bit about, how we, connect with nature to connect with our wild soul. You know, what is, you have a lot of sort of ways to do that in your book. Can you give us a kind of highlight of some of those?
Yeah, I think what I'd like to say is that really the book walks readers through the great archetypes of the earth. So the deserts, the forests, the oceans and rivers, the mountains and grasslands as aspects of their own psyches and souls. So one of the things that I was so aware of is that many of us, you know, live in very urban settings, other people are physically challenged. While I'd love everybody to be spending a lot of time outdoors, I know that's not always possible. So, but the thing is that the archetypes live within us. And these are sort of our ancient ancestors. They have incredible wisdom to share. So as I walk people through these landscapes, these sort of metaphors, these qualities emerge. So, for example, you know, if you think about the desert, silence, simplicity. You were just talking a little earlier about, you know, getting older and having less future to look towards. Impermanence is one of the qualities in the desert. In the forest, there's the quality of mystery, rootedness. So just these are just qualities that I sort of write sort of meditations on, tell stories about, but then each of them is followed by an exploration. So, for example, the silence in the desert, I talk about my own experience in the desert and sort of play with what it means to live in a culture that denies us silence in so many ways, that's so noisy, both with our own chatter, right, because we're very highly social beings, but also that other layer of noise that technology, you know, adds. But then I take people into an exploration where they can experience silence. And so that might be within their own home that they meditate quietly, but ideally it would be they would go out and find the quietest spot that they could find outside. But I wanted to be sure that people can connect to the wild soul within, these wild landscapes within them, just through awakening to these archetypes. I really want people to get that nature isn't outside. It's us. It's inside us. It's who we are. It's what makes us wholly human. It's not something that, it's something we can access in any moment wherever we are.
That's really amazing. You know, it's interesting because I love your understanding of that archetypal relationship. And, you know, archetypes are so core to human understanding. I mean, we have, you know, the astrological system is an archetype.
Absolutely.
The Briggs-Myers, that's an archetype. There are the deities of different cultures, gods and goddesses are all archetypes. You know, one's blood type and how one should eat accordingly
right.
is a kind of archetype. So, you know, there's so much of that. And in fact, you know, I happen to be very fortunately a student of Joseph Campbell. And I remember that there was this moment in one of Bill Moyer's very earliest interviews with him where he vividly described our relationship with the archetype. It's not that, you know, we believe in it or we believe in the deity, we believe in Lakshmi. It's that it opens a gateway to something in ourselves that we can then resonate with and be alive to and evolve with in some kind of sense. And he said it much better than I did, but when he said it, I actually burst into tears hearing it. There was something about that understanding of what archetypes, how they nourish us, that really was touching. And I actually obtained a copy of it, having seen it on TV, and I showed it in a film center that I was working with at the time. And, you know, 40 people sat in the room, saw this same thing, and it got to that point, and people burst into tears.
So that's how deep it is. And also, it speaks to a longing, doesn't it?
Yes.
For something that we feel, we suddenly realize in a moment, or let me speak for myself, because I don't know what brought you to tears, but as you were saying that, I was thinking, you know, it's like we realize that we have been out of touch with something so primary and so precious. And so it awakens this longing to re-inspire and reinvigorate that part of us.
That's right. That's it. Now, let's do the kind of thing that I sometimes do, and in fact that Bill Moyers, who is going to be retiring this year and who I hold in the highest esteem as a journalist and a role model in every regard, I remember in the early programs that he did with Joe Campbell, a lot of my more spiritually inclined friends would watch the program and they would feel irritated with Bill Moyers, and they would say, how come he's asking all those stupid, naive questions? He doesn't get it, you know? And as a longtime media person, I was kind of chuckling, knowing, and in fact, I learned this from him. You know, not everybody is coming along with you just because you say so on every ride you go on.
Right.
And, you know, and so those questions are, you know, for the sake of the stumbling blocks that, you know, for the sake of our recognizing getting past the stumbling blocks, and we all have different ones, right? So, you know, so I'm asking this kind of question for folks that, you know, would very naturally have stumbling blocks. I don't have time. I'm not nearby. I'm too busy. In fact, if we are in a cycle where we're out of touch that way, the idea of reconnecting before we do it can actually seem almost scary and agitating. I mean, I've been there myself.
Yes.
What do you say to that?
Yeah, I understand that deeply. You know, what I would say is, and I love that you actually, you express, I have no time, I'm too busy. You know, this is the world we've created. And one of the reasons we've created this world is because of our disconnect to the natural rhythms of nature. So that's it. What I would say is, it is frightening. You know, maybe I could tell a story.
Please.
That, 30 years ago, I was 27 years old, and I had just quit drinking. And I was a fearsome alcoholic, and I was literally shaking from detox. But I was on a bluff above the Pacific Ocean on a stormy day. And talk about being afraid. I literally did not know how I was going to live my life without drinking. And yet, as I looked out at this wild ocean, I recognized that the turmoil sort of mirrored this churning that was within me. And I also recognized that there was this power in this ocean that maybe also represented some kind of strength in me. And at that moment, I tasted salt in my mouth, and I didn't know if it was the ocean's or it was mine. And I felt this deep sense of oneness with this great body of water. And what happened was that I knew on some level, not consciously perhaps, but there was a kind of a settling, and I knew I was going to be okay. So what I know to be true is that it is scary to change. It is terrifying to change. It is terrifying to let go of those things that comfort us, we think, and that keep us safe. And certainly I have leaned on alcohol as a crutch for so many things in my life. But I also, in that moment, and I have come to think about it much more in the 30 years since, I realized that there was this incredible body of earth that was supporting me in making that change. And I wasn't alone. And I think this sense of aloneness, that an isolation that pervades our society, makes doing things feel frightening at times. But when we get that we're never alone, that we have this, we're part of something that is wildly creative, wildly life-giving, wildly supportive and nurturing, it feels a little less frightening. So, you know, maybe some listeners are going, I don't want to do this because busyness, in a way, keeps us safe. Overworking keeps us safe. We don't have to think too much about things, right? And yet, we're not happy. We're stressed. We're not living. We know in our hearts, we wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and we go, you know, is this all there is, right? So there's always this longing in us, I think, for something more, for something richer, deeper, and more real. And so it doesn't have to be a big step. It can be as simple as when you wake up in the morning, you say, today, instead of turning on my cell phone and my computer first thing, I'm just going to look at a patch of sky and just breathe that in and just acknowledge it. That's all I'm going to do. And do that for a week and just see what happens. Just be curious. Begin a relationship. Like, you know, you meet somebody, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know who they are. It's mysterious. But you get curious. You just start paying attention. And that's really a beginning place.
You know, I love that that example, because there's a patch of sky from anywhere you are. You know, deep in the heart of an urban environment, there's still a patch of sky. I was speaking with someone, and I can't remember who it was, but they said to me, oh, have you ever done that thing where you put the coconut in your mouth and swish it around and hold it in there, you know, for 10 minutes or whatever? Gee, that really helped me. I've been doing that. Well, that's called oil pulling. It's an Ayurvedic technique. I've done it for many years. Thanks to all of the wonderful teachers in the health spectrum. You know, we know about that, right? Mm-hmm. And so we, you know, if we have the time or we've had a dental issue that we want to resolve, we you know, we add that to our daily program. You know, maybe we take some vitamins, we decide what's healthy to eat for breakfast, you know, we floss our teeth, whatever we do.
Right.
So, you know, so the idea that actually we could get support and connection with the earth from in simple ways, you know, at the beginning of the day.
Right.
Rather than you know, because we, you know, we're here railing against, you know, how terrible it is that the three-year-old was screaming. This is a story in the first half of the show for listeners tuning in, was screaming when her iPad was taken away to get on a plane. But in effect, we function the same way when we just leap onto the computer. So even taking a pause, it's not that you're never going to get on the computer. It's not that you're going to crash the computer. You may need it for all kinds of reasons, your livelihood, whatever. It's not about, it's what you said about dancing the wild edge. It's
mm-hmm.
it's not about making ourselves wrong. It's just taking a pause to let something else in. And something
right.
far more ancient and far more connected to the core of who we are.
Yes, absolutely. Beautifully said, yes.
Well, your work is fantastic, and it really opens people up. I'm having that experience. I hope my listeners, our listeners, are having it. So if you're enjoying this, people, Reclaiming the Wild Soul is the book. MaryReynoldsThompson.com is the website. So I just want to kind of bring people back to that, you know, for more connections and reminders. You know, I just have to ask you, I've had a long-standing relationship, not only with the ocean, you know, because there'll be photographs of the ocean or photographs with waves, but with the earth-ocean connection. You know, in other words, the earth, the beach, the walking way, the path, the edge where we walk on the earth and the ocean is right there. It's one of my own personally most deep and long-standing connections on Earth, and I'd just be curious, you know, when we're talking about archetypes, what you may have an understanding about that.
Well, that's interesting. I feel that many of us have that very special relationship with walking on a beach mm-hmm. by the ocean. And, you know, one of the things that I notice is, you know, my husband and I live in Marin County, California, and we're very blessed to be very close to the ocean, and we go there frequently, is you don't see unhappy people. You see happy dogs, happy children, happy families. So there's something very invigorating about being by the ocean. One of the things that I feel, and I wrote about in the book, was this idea of generosity, that, you know, that we arose from the oceans. We, you know, we sort of came onto land, I think it's about 300 million years ago. And so we have an understanding that life on Earth was birthed from the oceans. And, you know, each sort of pregnancy is a reenactment of that evolutionary history in a way. And it's, so there's something so profoundly connected and connective about being by the ocean. And then being, for me, being on the beach is, there's something I love about seeing, I don't know if you feel the same way, the footprints. I love to see my footprints next to the ocean. And I wonder so much about that, you know, whether it's this childlike quality of sort of playing in mother's skirts, you know, it's as though that foam and the waves are the great sort of skirts of the mother, and we're just small and insignificant, but we get to play by her and we get to see ourselves by her. I don't know, it's a mystery, but I do feel, you know, with our salty blood, with our the fact that we really, you know, we grow up in this ancient sea of amniotic fluid, there's just a depth of knowingness about how these oceans birthed us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also there's there's a grandness, a grandeur to it that's, it's very, in the ocean, the view is very, you know, wide, and the sky is very big, and the sense that of our place here
is
you know, relatively speaking, is
and there's an immensity that you feel. It's absolutely true, and I think that many people feel towards the oceans as a sort of a great spirit, because of exactly what you say, this sort of vastness of space and water and sky that at times sort of blur into one, you know, depending on what the weather and the light, and you just, it's, and so that opens us up to our own inner connection to that immensity. And I think that that's, you know, there again, if we don't have visions for things outside of us, then we don't get to experience them inside. I always love what Thomas Berry said. He said, imagine if we came out of the moon. I mean, barren, beautiful last night in its gorgeous red moonness, blood moonness. But but if we had grown up on the moon, I mean, how would we, what would our imaginations be? What would our creativities be? What would our sense of self be like if we grew up on a barren planet? Well, not planet, but body. And so it's the very beauty of this earth that gives birth to our incredible depth and breadth of what's inside of us.
Yeah, that's really true, and it's not the way, you know, we always think of it, but it makes, the other thing that occurred to me as you say this is that, you know, one of the things that they have discovered that we now know in the, you know, study of genes and epigenetics, which is the interaction between our genes and our environment and the functional areas of the body that kind of interface between the two. So, you know, we used to think it's just our genes or it's just the environment, but actually there's living interaction embedded into our DNA, and our reality as genetic beings. And one of the things that they have found is that something that one's ancestors has experienced, or many of them have experienced, such as a traumatic experience or, you know, something like that, can actually alter the genome and be passed down to many generations. But it's also true that for many generations, our, you know, ancestors and human beings have experienced and connected with and been sustained by the earth. That is so, you know, it's like so big and obvious that it's almost like invisible, you know. So that's a tremendous built-in resonance, you know, even on that microbiological level.
Absolutely. And that's what gives me hope, because it is so completely ingrained in us that we just need to wake it up. We just need to reclaim it. We've had it, as you say, and actually we still have it. We just need to wake up to that.
So what are, you know, if people are, you know, experience, you know, like they read your book or they listen to this show, they read your blogs on your website, MaryReynoldsThompson.com, they get in touch with this, then they get caught up, they forget about it, they find themselves eventually perhaps in a place of need or desperation or fear or worry or panic, you know, how, what do they do then? How do they take this resource? How do they reconnect?
Well, first of all, to have tremendous compassion. I mean, the world and everything is geared up towards us not being connected to nature. You know, all I would say is, you know, certainly email me. You're very happy to go to my website and email and see what's happening. But just take a breath. You know, sometimes, you know, even more simple than looking at the sky is just remember to take a breath and remember who you are. You know, you are a product of 4.5 billion years of evolutionary Earth history. You are magnificent. You are powerful. You are whole. And just once in a while when you feel yourself losing a grip on it, and it's so easy to find ourselves there. Take a breath and remember that.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Mary, for this wonderful conversation. You know, just loved every minute of it and look forward to having you back on the show, you know, and delving into your book further. Thank you for the work you're doing very much, and thank you for being on the show. And, you know, I hope many people are reached by and connect with what you're offering. I think it would really be wonderful for us as individuals and collectively.
Thank you so much, Allison. Thank you.
And I will help people stay connected because we'll have you back on the show, too.
Lovely. I look forward to it. And it's
when you're
really
ready to come,
been
so.
A pleasure.
And thank you, listeners, for staying with us and being with us today, and being with us ongoing on Connect the Dots. As I've talked today with Mary Reynolds Thompson, author of Reclaiming the Wild Soul, and every week on Connect the Dots, we bring you people who have a lot of depth and wisdom and understandings to share with us. Thank you for your allegiance to the show. Looking forward to being with you again next week. At Wednesday, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, I'm Allison Rose Levy. Be well.